I'm David from Raeburn Fine Wines in the UK. We're importers. We import 250 or so growers a year, about half of which are in organic or biodynamics, and about 30% of which are in sustainable programs. And altogether, about half of those are formally certified. The other half, you never have any idea. So it's quite a high percentage for a UK wine business. And we've got a great panel with us today with considerable experience and expertise, which includes growers, négociants, certification body, farming research, a new regenerative farming body. The title is In the Vineyard, How Does Sustainability Regenerate Vineyards Without Organics? So you've got three epic words in one title, sustainability, regenerative, and organics. But there's a critical subtitle. What does sustainability in vineyards at scale look like? So we're not talking about small holdings under 10 hectares here. We're talking about the largest concerns in the wine industry into hundreds or many thousands of hectares. So I'd like to start the panel by introducing themselves, take a few minutes to talk about what you do or why you do what you do. Stephen, should we start with you?
Okay, yeah, thank you. So, and hi, everybody. My name is Stephen Cronk. I am an Englishman in Provence. I persuaded my wife to sell the family house in London in 2009, and we moved down here to Provence, having never made wine, having never spoken a word of French, and never built a wine brand before. So, but thankfully, it's gone okay. We chose a good region wine-wise. Yeah, we're now selling in 60 countries around the world. So, but I bought a wine estate nearly 4 years ago. So it was always my dream to have a wine estate, although people tried to talk me out of it. I eventually made the move. And it was very important for me because this was my dream, is to have my own vine. So we bought a wine estate in near a village called Le Garde-Freinet, which is just inland from Saint-Tropez. And it's 20 hectares total, 14 hectares of vineyards. And it had been conventionally farmed for 20 plus years. There was nothing living in it or even around it apart from the vines. Yet actually surrounding us is a nature reserve, untouched forest. So you can really see, in fact, when you look at it from ground level in the middle of the summer where the vines are lush and green, it feels very green. But when you look at it from above, so we did some drone photography, you realize actually this is desertified. You know, the only living thing here is the vine, and we converted to organic. We started the conversion in 2019, but going organic wasn't going to restore the soil, which is I think the crux of this talk today. We wanted to regenerate, and somebody put me in touch with Mimi Castile, who's an Oregon-based regenerative wine farmer. And she got me persuaded that we needed to change our farming practices and to focus on regenerative farming. So, and we decided, we also didn't find many resources. We thought, okay, how do I do it? Where's my checkbox list? And of course, there isn't one when you're working with nature. But we decided to instead create a foundation or a nonprofit to try and help farmers transition from any other kind of farming, or maybe they're already transitioning anyway, but to convert to a more of a regenerative mindset.
Charles, should we hear from you next?
Right, thank you very much. Or yes, good evening from New Zealand. Charles Murfield. I'm an independent scientist, come out of the horticultural sector, so I specialise in cropping, and so doing research and advising. My background, I came out of organic vegetable production. I started my career as a grower before moving into the science sphere in around the mid-90s. So what I do is I kind of see myself very much as a bridge between the world of science and the world of farming and horticulture. But also because I've come out of production, I'm a generalist in the scientific space, which is quite unusual. So I cover everything off soils, crops, pests, diseases, weeds, machinery, farm systems, the whole, pretty much everything apart from things with legs on them. I don't do livestock. So I also kind of bridge the academic silos, which I think is increasingly important. Science has become really siloed, and farmers can't deal with silos. Farmers, growers can't deal with silos. They need integrated information. So I kind of find myself, although I'm a generalist, being kind of quite specialized in that field. So looking at this whole topic as well, as a scientist, interesting listening to the two previous sessions, and the fact that regulation seems to be a really key driver of this issue I really come at this straight from the science. I look at the planetary challenges we face, not only climate change, but biodiversity loss, excess nutrients in the environment, or all the synthetic chemistry we've released, issues around water, all these kinds of things. And I go, okay, these are really big challenges. What do we therefore have to do at the individual vineyard level to start reducing our impact on these, so that we can keep producing while also then kind of going, the environment is changing, and that's not just the climatic environment, also political and economic as well. How do we create vineyard systems that are going to have resilience and robustness, so when we get increasing external shocks, those shocks can be absorbed and the vineyard system can rebound and continue functioning on again? And having been looking at this for a number of years, to me, the really key word in this is diversity. And that's every kind of diversity you can think of, starting with biodiversity. To me, as Stephen's just said, he bought a vineyard that was a desert, apart from vines. So I look at all these problems and go, we really have to increase the diversity, and the foundation of all of that is plant diversity. Also actually potentially diversifying out of vines. I use the example in New Zealand, Mulberry or Sauvignon Blanc. We've got 10,000 hectares of nothing but Savvy. You really don't want anything nasty to come in that's really bad for Sauvignon Blanc. So diversifying cultivars, but diversifying even potentially into different perennial crops as well. So, you know, and there's vineyards here that are diversified into livestock farming as well to really, you know, bring that about. So I do tend to focus, therefore, very much on the kind of the biophysical in the vineyard rather than the social economic, but I think they're really important as well. So you need diversity in those and diversity in thinking. To me, it's one of the interesting things around the regenerative agricultural space. There was a survey done about 2+ years ago in New Zealand as regenerative agriculture was really taking off, and talking essentially a survey of farmers and growers and everybody involved in regenerative agriculture to identify the key things that really made regen, the mindset, thinking differently is really, really important. So diversity of thought as well.
Michele.
Here I am. Hello. Very nice to be here. I'm a winemaker too, since a little bit more than 25 years in Tuscany. I actually thought just to describe my approach to retire on my 20s by doing wine in Tuscany. But in fact, I found a very complex and interesting opportunity to be an entrepreneur too. And in a way, also to engage in politically for my value chain and for the society we live in, and to try to imagine that business too can be a positive leverage for society. And so with this idea in mind, I have participated now since a bit more than 10 years into the Qualitas project, actually a project that comes bottom up from the industry itself. So the businesses and the academics and the associations that in a way represent our industry have joined into a very large project of understanding what the sustainability challenges were for our value chain, and imagine to put together all the efforts that were ongoing, because we can see that in the last 10, 15 years there has been significant efforts in our industry to try to create business models, or in general to make research to define the borders of what sustainability could be for wine. So we made this great effort to put them together and try to govern a joint action that ended in the creation of a company, a standard that would define a standard, which has been done around 2014-15. And then diffuse this standard as a third-party certification system since 2016-17 now. standard that is now representing more or less nearly 20% of the Italian value chain, if we consider also the wineries that are converting to it, let's say, under certification process. And I'm still fully part of it as a vice president with specific let's say, missions, including the dialogue with organic farming. We have been creating significant dialogues and joint protocol, and we're working tightly to also have the organic world join the challenge of sustainability. And just to add another perspective to our discussion. Thank you.
Right. Bruno.
Bonjour tout le monde. I'm Bruno Le Breton from Montpellier in the south of France. I am a winemaker, but owner of two domains, Domaine de la Jasse and Domaine Montlob. We are producteur négociant, and I was very lucky to be able to buy the estate when I worked in 2008 to my former boss, and to continue the project I started with him in 1995, and to continue with my family. And so when I bought from him the estate, it was a very important thing for me to make the company much recognized. And that's why we did a lot in sustainability with this Dutch boss. But I wanted to have some very serious certification that really answered to the what we think we thought it was the issue for the future. So we have corporate social responsibility on certification since 2015 on our B Corp, and we enter this subject through the strategic approach to have a larger view. Whatever the profession, the viticulture organization started to build, we wanted to create our own view and hear directly our stakeholder what they expect from us, instead of repeat all the mistake we did in the past and the mistake we continue to do. And so that's what, you know, in a way we are not organic, because for me it's not possible to be responsible and organic. I will tell you, let you my idea later, but it's really to be more focused on my company, because I of course in all my life I never rent any money, and in 2008 it was the beginning of big adventure with my bank. And so to make the company more stronger and more sustainable, I really have to understand all the mistakes, all the things that could damage. And that's why I like the sustainability engagement to make this risk analysis and to give the best answer, especially on the vineyard management.
Okay. So, in terms of the subtitle of the talk, what does sustainability in vineyards at scale look like? Charles touched on the necessity of getting away from monocultural Vitis vinifera and onto biodiversity and onto perhaps including animal culture in the vineyard. Stephen, should we come to you for a bit more about your take on regenerative and the regenerative certification scheme? And how that could work at scale?
Yeah. So this is obviously a huge topic, and we could probably talk for hours on the whole thing, the whole subject of sustainability and organics and the roles everything has to play. The foundation that we launched last year isn't a certification system. It can point people towards certifications if they want that, but it's more about the why people should start thinking in a regenerative mindset. And the role that it can play not only in creating genuinely sustainable farming, my version of sustainable isn't keeping normal, but actually putting back and growing, because I didn't want to sustain the soil quality I had when I bought the vineyard. That's going to drive me out of business. My organic life in the soil was less than 1%, and I needed to improve that. So to regenerate is is what we believe in. And ultimately, I think, you know, what I'm seeing from a lot of the people who I've spoken to in the last year or so who've been practicing regenerative viticulture for in some case 20 years, but generally, you know, longer than I have, is that eventually you can reduce your input costs, have greater biodiversity, have better soil quality, have less disease and high quality fruit. So the whole point of the foundation is to try and support with evidence, scientific evidence, that actually you can create a better balanced ecosystem in your vineyard by bringing nature back in a controlled way, not just stopping plowing straight away, but eventually going no plow or low plow. But bringing biodiversity back in, focusing on growing soil, because that will grow the grapes. And the mindset, Bruno was earlier talking about recognizing the mistakes of the past. And this is where I was amused when Charles said that he doesn't work with anything with legs, but the biggest problem is things with legs is the humans. And we need to work with them first. Because I've just come back from 3 weeks in the States, and they've done, and my team here, even though I thought they knew what I wanted to do, they've been very heavy-handed here with turning the soil, and I'm really upset. So the people come first in this case. But yeah, it's ultimately about proving that regenerative can restore the ecosystems, can make better fruit, better wine, and actually cost less money. And we also, when we look at certifications, because, you know, that's one reason why we're not looking to insist on any certification, is because I think oftentimes, whilst it's useful to show the client, the consumer, that you are doing certain things, from a kind of more macro level, it can be a barrier to entry. And if I look at biodynamics and organics, a lot of people go, oh gosh, it's too complicated or it's too restrictive. So that's why we're focusing on really the mindset around regenerating soil. And we'll point people, like I say, you know, there are Miguel Torres has just launched a certification program with his Regenerative Viticulture Association in Spain. And obviously there's the ROC in the States that have launched a program for vineyards as well. And it's, you know, it's very important that, you know, if people want to show they've made that transition from conventional or organic to regenerative, that they can put something on the bottle. But the consumer's already confused by organic, let alone sustainable, let alone regenerative. So yeah. I just think, you know, from my perspective, and I think from my trustees, we're just trying to do the right thing in the vineyards, and the consumer knowledge and demand pull through might come later.
Yeah, I sort of think it's fundamentally important that people are allowed to say that it should be legal, that people can say what they do. That if you farm without chemicals or you farm with biodiversity, you can say that. There should be nothing that blocks you from just telling the truth.
Exactly.
Michele, to come to you, in the email exchange that we had, you talked about the need for analysis and for understanding what is happening. Is that in order so that you can then make decisions about what to do next?
Well, I think, you know, I like very much what Stefan said, is that we need to grow the culture around those topics, and I think this is really important. So I think that we need to, those kind of approaches are extremely important, just as much as we need rules and parameters and indicators that refer us to the problems, that to the big challenges that we need to face. I don't think that the two things are one against the other. I think they need to work together. And actually, so my experience was an experience very oriented into creating a certification and a system of rules and of indicators. And I think that we have enough information today to create a global world guideline on what those kind of rules and parameters and indicators should be. And that's what we really need. And that's where Sustainable Wine Roundtable can make a difference. Just as much as, I repeat, we need to continue promoting and discussing other, in some way, counterbalances mechanisms, just like the foundation of Stefan, who criticize or analyze or looks at this from another perspective, which is as important. So again, coming back to your question and the analysis or the quantitative approach, I think that this is essential. I think that actually I would add another dimension that you just also mentioned. I think that the fourth pillar of sustainability is verification. I think that the three main pillars are, okay, the social dimension, the economical, and the environmental. We should all be always analyzed with the several parameters that I repeat, we kind of know which one they are and which one we should prioritize. So, and this is one point. But the fourth pillar is that we cannot exclude the need of verifying the claims and the calculation and all the system that needs to be put in place to be able to declare what we declare when we approach sustainability in a serious and complete way. And this is extremely important. So in this sense, we have a challenge. We cannot skip and avoid this challenge. This is extremely, extremely important. And so I think that this is something that we have to keep closely in mind. In terms of scale I don't know, in wine there are so many scales. Scales are all important and all have probably slightly different challenges, but I don't think that there is a scale which can and should be excluded by this need of, again, analysis and quantitative approach to sustainability once we have clarified the parameters. And I think that this is also something that is good to keep in mind. And I think that there's also another aspect that I consider that I have in mind. We don't have to forget that today our problem is to harmonize the rules and to be sure that as much as possible of growers and of territories and of institutions recognize those rules to be rules which are based on the idea that we know the challenges, we know the indicators, we run them, and we make a self-assessment, let's say, even though it's certified, whatever, but we self-assess where we stand, and we try to move for a mitigation of the impacts and in general to improve our rating of, let's say, sustainability. Then the next step will be to use those data, those aggregate data, those experiences of analyzing and quantifying to be able to set benchmarks. And this is the next challenge. So let's work fast and hopefully to solve the number one problem to then reach the number two problem, which is the problem of needing to have benchmarks that determine what is really decent in terms of sustainability approach for a wine bottle and what is not. And I repeat, I don't think that although we're all frustrated a little bit about what the idea that organic, which is such a small part, is sometimes let's say we have the doubt that it's not the perfect solution everywhere and all the time, has taken the lead on the scene of communicating sustainability. But this is a reality, and it's an asset at the end. The asset, sustainable organic farming, is an asset because people have understood that thanks also to it, there are problems and that there are some solutions. And so I totally think that we have just not to demonize, but to include organic in our path of growing all together toward a better sustainability.
Bruno, you said that you were interested in other things that are not really covered by Terra Vitis or HVE or organic certification, things like greenhouse gases, limited resources of the planet, or the impossibility for economies to continually grow endlessly. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, but if you've only focused on the environment problem and issue, you really have to have a strategic approach because it's not simple. And you have to be clear at the beginning on the most important and the less important. All these certifications were made in the 70s, where the biodiversity and the health was the problem. And they built on that. Now, become very fast, the greenhouse gases and the limited resources of the planet. So we really have to keep in mind that these three problems have to be considered in order. And if, because of the biodiversity, we damage the climate and the greenhouse gases, we have to justify. If because of biodiversity, we have an impact on the limited resources of the planet, we have to justify. And not the contrary. Our product is a pleasure product. We are not agriculture. We don't feed the people. And that's why I'm not organic. We worked with some doctors with an alcohol issue. And one of them explained me, oh, what is your project as a wine producer? You want to promise your client that they will have organic cancer. Okay. So I understood that there's a miscommunication. We are part of agriculture, but our product is cultural. So it's dangerous to mix the issue of these two different cultures. We have to be more responsible than the other because we deliver pleasure. So in these standards, I can't find the line, the guide to really be efficient on the environmental issue of the actual we have in the world. That's why we create, and that's why I like what is doing in these topics, and how the people are at the same level. I respect a lot of organic producer. What they do is very well and much better than what was the standard. But we have to create this strategic approach to be sure that we take care first of all on the greenhouse gases. And to be honest, at this time, on the standard that exists, it's not well right. It's not well done. And if we respect the standard, we won't save the world with the wine. So that's why we have Terra Vitis, HVE, but we don't think it's something enough.
And so I guess my question about all this is, are we going to see more and more and more certification bodies and schemes, like a multiplicity, getting ever more complicated, confusing the marketplace endlessly? Or I think what Toby is looking to do with Sustainable Wine Forum is to say, look, here's a platform for basic acceptable sustainability, which you can adapt locally. But what I like about the HVE approach is that you've got three levels, albeit very small levels and very easy to start. If there are three levels of HVE, do there need to be 10 levels in total?
Exactly. You're totally right.
We need to have a top to point to or to aim towards.
Yes.
Whether we're thinking about chemicals or whether we're thinking about agroforestry or regenerative, whatever our approach is, needs to be something to aim towards. And what I see in the certification field is that there's sustainable, three levels of HVE, organics, biodynamics. 100 years ago they didn't exist. Now only for 100 years do they exist, and then now regenerative. And then it's not going to stop, is it? But I just don't see. I don't see something that everybody can aim towards, which includes everybody.
Yeah. Sorry, Bruno. Yeah, look, if I can chip in a couple of things. Yeah, look, I mean, this multiplicity of standards is not a new issue. The FAO wrote this standard, supposed to be a global agricultural sustainability standard, the initials of which are SAFA, S-A-F-A, which was supposed to be the mother and father of all these sustainability standards. It really hasn't been adopted widely. But I also look at this from the scientific perspective. The scientific understanding of the size and the complexity of the challenges we face is evolving at breakneck speed. It's really quite astonishing. And, you know, even, you know, simple things like our understanding of how soils function and what drives soil biology and soil organic matter. This is stuff is evolving now at a serious, serious pace. So if you kind of have one static-ish standard, the science is going to say it's out of date really quickly. So even if you manage to create a smallish number of standards, they themselves will have to evolve to keep up with the science. This is not an easy challenge, I would have to say.
And Charles, in terms of the answering the title of the talk, can we have sustainability without organics?
Yeah, I mean, we have to. That's a massive can of worms somebody decided to open up there. We have to have sustainability. Otherwise, the planet stops supporting human life. You know, this is getting really brutal and quite close to the edge here. So from a scientific perspective, we're flying by the seat of our pants. To me, it was kind of interesting that you can't do organics at scale, because I class kind of organics and regenerative and stuff like agroforestry as well as they're all forms of agroecology, which is increasingly the capstone term for all the sustainable acts. That stuff requires attention to detail. And one of the things with intensive agriculture, the industrialization of agriculture, agrochemicals, it made farming and growing really simple. It's kind of like painting by numbers kind of stuff. You just look on a book what chemical to put on and you put it on at scale. Ecological systems don't work like that. You have to pay attention. So I'm not quite sure exactly why the thinking is you couldn't do organics at scale, but if it was around the fact that it needs that attention to detail, all the ecologicals will need that. So you've really got to get in there and have that understanding. Again, the chemistry made stuff really simple. If you're going to have an ecologically based system, whether it's regenerative, organic, or whatever, you've got to understand how the system functions and what kind of manipulations you can make to get the end result you want. That's not simple stuff. It requires depth of knowledge and attention to detail.
So does this mean that more wineries need in-house?
Yeah. Look, this is part of the problem. Intensive agriculture made production really simple. The flip side of that is if you're going to go towards a more ecological future again, that makes it more complex. So the amount of in-house knowledge or the amount of knowledge being, you know, paid for to be brought into the vineyard is going to increase. You know, we see that with organics. You need to step up your level of understanding of the system, and the same for regen. So yes, it's that is the challenge. You know, in the two previous sessions talked about the big corporates can do this because they just hire people that have expertise in this area. The challenge is for those smaller producers who simply can't do that, how they get that expertise in. And it's interesting, you know, again, Australia and New Zealand are very similar. We have a single national wine organization. They've developed a single national sustainability standard, and they have the resources to go down to that individual producer level and help them achieve this kind of stuff. And that's kind of a lot of my day job, is basically going and to do workshops and field days and go and talk to farmers and say, okay, this is how things work. This is the kind of stuff you need to understand. So there's a lot of upskilling to be done.
So you sort of start by looking at where they are and then what their problems are and then what they can do and help them.
Yeah. And that's kind of me too. One of the kind of interesting contrasts that Stephen touched on between organics and regen, organics created standards as a deliberate barrier to entry to maintain a market premium. Regen doesn't have that. To start in regen, you simply have to go, okay, I'm going to use less herbicides, or I'm going to increase the diversity of plants in my vineyard, and you're on. But the other contrast is organic standards are a bar. They're a static target, and you're either over and you're under, whereas regen is all about continuously improving that mindset. Am I doing a better job this year than I did last year? So kind of in the end, actually, regen almost becomes a higher target to achieve because you have to keep doing better, whereas organics, the standards really haven't changed since the 1990s, what's required to achieve organic standards.
So regen's saying there's a ladder and you just need to get a foot on it, and it's easy to get a foot on it, and then you don't have to stop.
Keep going.
And so you might pick up, as you go up the ladder, you might pick up other parallel level of certification on the way if you so wished, but you don't have to stop going.
No. And to me, that was kind of one of the things in the endless debates, the regen and biological farming before it said, should we get into certification? And a lot of us that have had a long-term involvement in organic said, be very careful what you wish for. You know, certification can also become a millstone, which I think it has in organics, we're kind of trapped by those standards, and they've failed to evolve because we have this international bureaucracy around standards that are basically immutable now.
Yeah, for example, for us as wine importers, we are now paying to be certified to touch organic produce. We don't make anything. We just import it and store it and sell it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's like a lot of bureaucracies, they become self-perpetuating and self-fulfilling.
Yeah.
You know, there was good reasons to have them in the first place, but kind of now the reasons for having that certification have been lost and they've become an end in themselves. You know, and that doesn't just apply to organics. It applies to a whole load of certification systems across and auditing systems across a whole bunch of sectors, not just agriculture. So that's the kind of regen has got that light-footedness and the ability to move and take on board. You know, there's quite a lot of this new science has actually been feeding regenerative agriculture with how to do farming and growing. You know, so simply this stuff around increasing your plant diversity, there's some very, very solid soil science, ecological science and stuff underpinning those approaches.
But it requires a certain amount of confidence and belief to make these steps away from what's been done historically and to recognize that maybe what my father did in this vineyard wasn't all right. The acceleration of knowledge we have around soil health, for example, is far more rapid than any certification, as Charles was saying, could ever keep up with. So, it's important that we understand why we're doing it, but it's not a things you cannot do. It's the things you should be doing. What's the cause and effect of bringing in cover crops? What's the cause and effect of turning more towards agroforestry? And what was really interesting, I was in the States on business, and I was lucky enough to go up to Napa to visit the Jackson four of the Jackson family winery vineyards there, and they are doing regenerative farming at scale there. But even there, it's not didactic. It's not being dictated from above that this is what you must do in each vineyard. That here's a recipe to follow. Every vineyard's got its own challenges and its own struggles, and they're learning. And this is the thing with regen is that we never stop. We're trying to figure out nature and how to work in concert with nature rather than against it. And nature's being created over millions of years, and we're trying to figure it out in 5 years. So, but also Miguel Torres is he's converting, I think, more or less 1,500 hectares of what was organic vineyards into regen vineyards because he's been dropping heavy metals into the soil for a lot of years. You know, so he's got copper there. So he's trying to work out what plants can lift the copper out and how can he get the nitrogen back in the soil using plants rather than using even organic fertilizers. So it's a long, complex journey, but I think regenerative doesn't fit. In my view, it doesn't fit certification very easily.
And I know
I've got a rule of thumb. If you're farming or growing like your grandparents, stop doing it now. It's almost certainly wrong.
Yeah.
We have got perhaps 30 seconds left before we get to the end of the session. The overall title of today's conference was The Vineyard and Winery in 2030. So on a yes or no basis, could large-scale viticulture be sustainable by 2030?
It needs to be.
Yes, it has. It has to be. There is no.
Michele?
Yeah, but I think I'm sorry. I have to just say that if we don't set the minimum levels of what the definition of sustainability is, and if I may add, Bruno, I don't want to contradict you, but for example, you made a good example. HVE is exact example of something that is ruining the reputation of sustainability protocols. Because it is too weak, it's not looking at all pillars. And again, we cannot think that since the target of the sustainability approach is it must be, for example, if we keep it even to soil and if we keep it to the discussion of biodiversity, what kind of biodiversity? What is the level that we accept as minimum and as decent? Because otherwise, it becomes just an exercise which is auto-referential and it doesn't look at the challenge that we have, which is global. So this is my opinion. It can be without organic or with organic. I don't have at all a problem, only if we work on setting rules on how we define it and then benchmark on how we imagine the minimum level should be.
So Michele didn't go for the yes or no option, but that's fine. Bruno, do you have a yes or no?
Yes, I'm quite sure we'll succeed, because what I see that now the wine professional, they now start again to hear the stakeholder and accept to hear the people, not from our industry, but from outside. So we will improve. For all the time I worked at the beginning, we were only by ourselves. And it's a new world for us. And I'm sure we'll succeed.
Great. Thanks all for your time today. Much appreciated.